Now, nowadays, because people used to count the gold carts going across the street, they dug a tunnel. You can't count it anymore. You don't even know where the gold is going across the street. They just say it went through the tunnel, see? Okay. Now, gold goes overseas. Oh, it's going overseas, you see? All the gold going overseas at $20 an ounce in 1932. See, you seen the game being played? Or what's the game? The gold is going across the street, and our president gets on the radio, and he says, "My dear friend, you see, there are starving babies in this nation. Tears. They're hungry. Millions are out of work. And the reason for that is the lack of confidence in our dollar. Because gold is going overseas. It is a lack of confidence that is causing the hunger and the pain and misery of our nation." More tears. I therefore, the President of the United States, ask you, the patriotic people of America, if you will loan your gold for 90 days to the government of the United States under the solemn promise of the President of the United States, band music, to return your gold, and I will present you with a written promise of the return of that gold in 90 days. The American people, flags are waving, saluting, gold in hand, go down to their bank and lend it on the promise of the President of the United States, who would never lie. 95% of all the gold held in the United States was voluntarily taken down and lent to our government on the solemn promise that in 90 days it would be returned. Then the president had a law passed that said that you dirty people, if you ask for your gold back, you go to jail. After he had the gold. He didn't pass that one first. Oh, no. After they had the gold. Now, where was the gold going? Why, it was going across the street into the basement of Chase Manhattan. At $20 an ounce. That's what you got for it, right? When you turned it in. 20 paper dollars. And then the president says, started fluctuating the price of gold and settled it at 35. The gold came back across the street with a nice 14 thousands of millions of profit. The price increased in gold. Of course, you dirty American people weren't supposed to get that awful profit. That was bad for you, wasn't it? Somebody got it. Somebody got the profit. Now, notice something. They said everybody lost in the stock market crash. Ask yourself a question. If everybody lost, that's impossible. If everybody lost a dollar, somebody made a dollar. Who made the dollars? You're not supposed to ask those questions, are you? You see, yes, Bertrand, we keep asking these awful questions, and that's the reason why we should shut up and let the thing go along peaceful its own way. We keep agitating by asking these awful questions. They're embarrassing. Now, who got the dollars? Who picked up the mortgages on the houses, on the insurance policies, on the bank deposits? Who picked it up? Ask yourself the question. The people who lent the money on the margins on the stock. Now they got the gold. Now they didn't have enough. They want something more. This is only a 60-day little operation, you know. Now that you had that little thing cleaned up, you got your money back for your investment in the new president, well, you have to do something else. Now you've got a bunch of billions laying around in paper, don't you? You've got to do something with it. You have to have your assets out earning money. You don't want them laying around earning nothing. So what do you want to do? Well, they decided, let's put it into factories. But now if you start putting hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars, investing in American industry, what would happen? Why, prices would rise. The Depression would be over. And you couldn't buy as many factories that way, could you? How can you keep the prices down while you buy? Oh, excuse me, I'm back right up today, huh? The NRA. The president gets on the radio. My dear friends, people are hungry. Baby is just starving. Millions are out of work. More tears. He says, now, the reason is that we have lost confidence. See? And what we need to do is prime the pump. We must get the economy going again. How do we prime the pump? Watch this. The reason we have a depression is that prices are too low. Remember I said about a false assumption? We have a depression because production is too low. Not prices. If prices were lower, production would be up. But he said, prices are too low. We, therefore, are going to double prices to prime the pump. All businessmen must meet together with their competitors and establish prices double the present market price or go to jail. You must collude in monopoly or go to jail for the good of the nation. I like that. Now ask yourself a little question. That's num-num, see? We kind of use our little head here and say, if prices double and people don't have any money, do they buy more or less? If they buy less, do more or less people work? Are more or less people plants open or closed? Are plants cheaper to buy? There was only one way they could invest their money in American industry and keep the prices down. By passing the Non-Recovery Act. To prove this little thing, check every economic indicator of the United States government for May 1938, the second lowest month of history after Roosevelt had been in office 5 years, lower than the month he took office 5 years earlier. Every single economic indicator. And what was he selling the American people? I got you out of depression. He said, boy, wonderful you did, but I wish I had a job. Once they had bought up heavy enough and invested their money, now you need to get the United States into debt. It's called war. War got us into very heavy debt. And who owns the debt? Why, the same banking group. Now, with a $1 trillion worth of federal debt being held by the bank group, the international bankers, the American taxpayers can be soaked $60 million in interest payments, $60,000 million in interest payments every year. And paid to a group who put up nothing. Remember, they didn't put up a single thing. They created the debt by an ink entry. This thing was even better than the gold swindle. Because you create the debt with fictitious money which you print, which you don't back with anything. Up in Minnesota a couple months ago, last month, there was a trial of a counterfeiter who was let go because the court found and the jury found that it could not be a crime for a man to counterfeit money that wasn't redeemable in anything. Because how can you counterfeit phony money? You see, if the money could be redeemed in gold, then what you were doing is stealing gold by printing the fake certificate, which could be redeemed in gold. But if the money can't be redeemed in anything, printing a fake one couldn't redeem you in anything but another piece of paper. And that could not be a crime. How do you like that? All right, just a little funsy. We throw those in free. No extra charge. Now that we had the Non-Recovery Act, they needed a war to get our debt. We pulled up a nice $300 billion and a nice little shoot 'em up between Marxist Adolf Hitler and Marxist Joseph Stalin. Notice that the Nazi Party came out of the Spartacus movement in Germany, which the German Communist Party came out of, and that the Nazi Party members almost universally carried Communist Party cards. And Communist Party members in Germany almost universally carried Nazi Party cards. One was the socialist and the other the Menshevik and the Bolshevik wing of the Communist Party of Germany. While they played the little game, the purpose of the game, however, was very interesting. It was called get control of the United States. Notice the Second World War was fought. The American people were told, all of our boys died in these beachheads, died in these battles to preserve the independence and liberty and integrity of the small nations of Eastern Europe. At the end of the war, what did our government do? It gave those very same nations to the most despotic, colonialist empire the world has ever seen. And put these people in the most abject slavery that made Adolf Hitler look like a humanitarian. And without a shot being fired. Why? They had a problem in 1945. The United States did not have an enemy in the world. All the armies of the world combined were insignificant in comparison to the military power of one nation with only 3% of the world's population and 6% of the world's land area. That one nation produced over half the world's total output, controlled 70% of the world's military forces, and had an atomic bomb. There was no way to punish the United States. You had to build an enemy. So 1946 and 47, the entire Russian army was put on the American payroll. And we paid the salary of every troop in the Russian army. We shipped to the Soviet Union plane loads of secret paper to make American money and the plates and our secret inks to print it. And redeemed over 19,000 millions of dollars worth of it for the International Monetary Fund. But this was all helping out. Now you see, you've got the Federal Reserve Act to control finances in the United States and American people. You've got to have now a World Bank to control world finances. And to control and see that there are no competition at all to have control over everybody's finances and business. Enter Bernard Baruch. And we have the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. For the purpose of, when we have enough runaway inflation in the United States, England, and France, they'll have collapse of the dollar, the pound, and the franc, and the radio is going to tell us that is the national monies which all the international conflicts and the inability of the exchange system to operate in a modern and complex society, that it can only be solved by the simple little thing of issuing a single money for the world, a world money signed by Robert Strange McNamara. And then they can control all of it. And then comes what they've already suggested in the United Nations in Switzerland 2 years ago. They were told that a new efficient bank system, since the money is now all in control, it would be efficient, and the program is to establish a system where everybody in the world has a bank account, which will be controlled not with money, but through a debit and credit system using an account number for every single human being, which will be tattooed in the right hand of each individual. And when a member of the delegation from France stated what happens to those people who object to the tattooing of the number on the back of their hand, it was told to him that these people would liquidate themselves by that refusal, for they could neither buy nor sell. How do you like those apples, huh? Didn't be a lot of fun. Well, what do we got? Refreshments? Oh. About 5 minutes?
Yeah.
People,
the punch will be on that side.
Okay.
And in the back, there'll be coffee and punch. Okay.
Right in here. Okay. Fine. Okay, we're going about 5 more minutes. Let's hold it. And the refreshment's not ready yet. Don't run for the Johns or so. My whole point of this little discussion is to understand something. That all of these historical events are not accidental. They are planned. History doesn't happen. It's made to happen. The course that history is taking is a course that has been intentionally carried out by people who've taken the energy and the time to carry it out. And if it's going to be reversed, it's going to be done by people who will put out the effort to reverse it. As simple as that. These people are fully committed to their program. Fully committed. The only question of the success of their program is what we do about it. If we do nothing, then their success is inevitable. Now, this group of insiders created and owned the whole communist movement from the very beginning. A small clique of monopolists had totally controlled it from the very inception. Lenin was obviously a hireling, as Khrushchev and Brezhnev and these boys. The International Communist International totally establishes all policy for all communist governments, including China, Cuba, Russia, and all of the others. There's never been any conflicts or splits. The splits are for American newspaper. You see, when China and Russia have a little argument, we now have an excuse to give tremendous aid to Russia to kill Americans in Vietnam. You wouldn't buy that aid without the little thing in your newspaper telling you about how we fight communism by supporting communists. We supported Tito to fight Stalin, remember? 19,000 of millions of dollars. We support Czechoslovakia to fight Russia. We support every communist nation to fight another communist nation, but they never fight each other. We keep getting sold a bill of goods. We have sold so far 122,000 of millions of dollars of American taxpayer money being given outright to communist nations to fight communism. Notice that there has never been a nation to fall to the communists in the world without the direct overt aid of the United States. Russia fell with the overt aid of President Wilson. And recognition of Franklin Delano Roosevelt preserved it in 1933. We'll even go further. The Eastern nations, all of Europe, all were enslaved by the direct orders of the United States of America. Germany was divided by the direct orders of the United States of America. We backed Armin Bandela, a known Moscow-trained communist in Algeria. We backed Patrice Lumumba while he killed 80 Negroes for every white in the Congo massacres. 80 Negroes who had two grades of education or more, who was a danger because he may be a leader in his tribe or community, to resist the communist takeover, was exterminated by the communist goons. We backed Fidel Castro in Cuba. We backed Juan Bosch in the Dominican Republic. We backed the head of the Communist Party of Latin America, Rommel Bentancourt, in Venezuela. In 1945, the United States government State Department financed and armed a man named Ho Chi Minh in French Indochina. In 1945, continued a war 5 months after Japan had unconditionally surrendered so Russia could get her army in the Far East and take Manchuria to turn over the arms supplies to Mao Tse-Sung. We, at the end of the war, saw that the Japanese arms went to Mao Tse-Sung and not to Chiang Kai-shek. Our State Department, under General George Catlett Marshall, went over and physically disarmed 39 divisions of Chiang Kai-shek while fighting for the liberty of one quarter of the world's population. Our nation cut off all aid, and not only aid, we refused to allow Chiang Kai-shek to even buy ammunition for the guns he had. In the Korean War, while our boys were dying in Korea and had defeated the North Koreans and were running to the Yalu, MacArthur knew that there was no possibility of intervention by either China or Russia. He knew Russia could not intervene because they'd have to intervene across a one-track railroad and support their army on a one-directional railroad, 3,000 miles long. A single bomb would starve the army out of existence. He also knew that China couldn't intervene. China had only 870,000 men under arms. Chiang Kai-shek had 660,000 men in Formosa. The moment Mao Tse-Sung put his troops in Korea, Chiang Kai-shek was going to go ashore, and he was going to run to Peking, and the show would be over. So what did the United States do? We put the 7th Fleet in the Formosa Straits so that Mao Tse-Sung could put his entire army into Korea. When MacArthur asked for permission to bomb the Yellow Bridges to cut supplies, they were told that they couldn't bomb the Yellow Bridges because China might intervene. When he asked what 870,000 troops on his front were, they were told that Russia might intervene. He said across a one-track railroad, they'd have to be mad. With the world's largest navy on both flanks, when the head of the Chinese army was asked how he could put his whole army in a peninsula with the world's largest navy on both flanks and the world's largest air force in his front, a place of total suicide, how he could do that, his answer was, I had assurances I would not be flanked. Ask yourself a question. Who can give him assurances he won't be flanked but the enemy? His enemy, the United States. In Korea, we fought under the UN flag. We agreed in 1945 that the Soviet Union would always select the head of all military forces of the United Nations. Seeing our troops fought under the UN flag, the head of our forces was a Soviet general who took a leave of absence in May 1950 and went to North Korea to lead the North Korean armies against the United Nations command, in which he was commander of both of them at the same time. And you'll wonder why we can't win. Ask yourself a question. When was the peace signed in Korea? When does the special president war power cease? Only when the peace is signed. The special dictatorial power is given to a president always in time of war. But when is the peace treaty signed in Korea? It can't be signed. We don't have an enemy to sign it with. We never declared a war. So the president's war powers never cease. They go on forever. The same as in Vietnam. There can never be a peace in Vietnam by law. For we can never sign a peace treaty because we never declared a war. Isn't that brilliant? You name a single nation. We backed Ahmad Sukarno in Indonesia and financed him. Ahmad Sukarno was not only a communist since his youth, but was a Japanese puppet governor at war with the United States of America. And we backed him in 1945 and brought him to power. There has never been a communist who ever come to power anywhere in the world without the direct, overt, intentional, and knowledgeable aid of the government of the United States of America. And until you understand that fact, you simply do not understand the whole folly that we're looking at. It isn't a matter that Russia is defeating us. Russia is a puppet and totally controlled and has been from New York from the very beginning. There is nothing and never has been anything in any communist military manual about warfare between nations. Read the manuals. It's all internal subversion, revolution, and riot. They never intend, and they have never taken a single nation from outside military action. Not one single Russian division has ever marched to conquer a single people anywhere in the world. They have all been sold out by their own nationals. It was Czechoslovakians who enslaved Czechoslovakia, Hungarians who enslaved Hungary, Romanians who enslaved Romania, Chinese who enslaved China, Koreans who enslaved Korea. All of these were internal. And when do we learn? Our newspapers keep telling us, talking about external war, the atomic bomb. That atomic bomb is dropped on you every day. It is to keep your eyes off the real A-bomb. It's marching in your streets. It is internal subversion. It is treason, not aggression. And always has been. You know, all of us understand a thing called a mafia. We believe it exists, don't we? The underworld gang that has a union in criminal underworld activities. There is a worldwide upper world mafia. And it is no different than the other mafia, other than it has enough money to be able to buy respect. But it is far more powerful and deadly. Why is it deadly? The underworld mafia only robs you. It doesn't enslave you. This mafia enslaves you and must destroy your body, soul, and spirit. It is the first time mankind has ever faced total war. Not war just to take your land, take your property, but total war to destroy you yourself as an individual and to make you nothing but a robot, totally controlled, mentally indoctrinated, and subservient in all respects to the will of the state. It is far more terrifying than anything man has ever met in history. It is to destroy the person themselves. And you are in the path of the conqueror. Let's take our break. Thank you. In the 1936, I talked about Mexico. Let's take a look at the French finding oil in the Sahara Desert and building a pipeline across Algeria to Iran, where we see Ahmed Ben Bella, trained in Moscow, come to start his FLN, which tortured to death by the most inhuman methods 20 Muslims every day for 8 years. And make it appear to be a revolution, which, of course, it was not a Muslim revolution. The vast majority of the Muslims, time and time again, voted to stay with France. But that wasn't the intention. That pipeline had to be cut and put it not in the hands of the French government to break the monopoly. Or let's take a look when the oil is found in Venezuela. Now, the head of the Latin American Communist Party, his name Ramon Bentancourt, joined the party in 1928. In 1934, he wrote the Red Book, the Manifesto, the Takeover of Latin America. Ramon Bentancourt organized the Venezuelan, Costa Rican, and Nicaraguan communist parties. He became El Presidente of Venezuela by military coup. He spends his weekends regularly at David Rockefeller's ranch at Maracaibo. And as David Rockefeller says about Ramon Bentancourt, quote, "I consider him one of my closest and dearest lifelong friends," end quote. It's interesting that Ramon Bentancourt, the head communist of Latin America, sees his power in Venezuela. He doesn't nationalize a single oil well at Maracaibo, all of which are owned by Standard Oil and their subsidiaries. Now, if you will take a look at another little map, you want to know what that is, that's Europe, and that's Africa. That's United States and South America. The major production areas in the world, southwestern United States, Venezuela, and the Middle East. Let's look at the oil routes today. Suez Canal is out, because the major markets are in Western Europe and Eastern United States. These are your major oil markets in the world. These are your sea lanes of oil. Notice where five of the six routes cross? At a place called Cuba. The independent oil companies built their major refineries in Havana, the best place in the world to have a refinery. But Fidel Castro came along, took care of that little show, didn't he? Watch the new one, Alaska. A couple of years ago, oil was discovered in Alaska, probably the greatest oil reserves in the world, the greatest discovery of oil ever. Now, here is an interesting little thing. Well, let me digress because I may forget this. The first tax-free foundation in the world, the Rockefeller Foundation, established 2 years before there was an income tax to Dodge, 1911. And Carnegie Corporation was founded the same day. They don't pay taxes. The num-nums pay. By the way, one industry has a special tax advantage over all other industries in the United States, and that's oil extraction. It's allowed to write off 27.5% of its investment every year, even beyond 100% unlimited. Any company with any year's history of oil extraction has built up reserves to allow them always to write off enough to make sure that no taxes ever have to be paid. And only one extractive industry, not extraction industries, but one, oil extraction. How come? Isn't that interesting? And who founded the CFR? Isn't that interesting? Well, anyway, we'll get back. Now, by the way, in New York City, there's an apartment building with only six apartments. Each take a full floor, $100,000 each. The owner of the building is Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller, who also has one of the apartments. You know who lived there the 4 years before he was elected to the White House? Richard Milhouse went for his training sessions. Yes, boss. Every morning. Anyway, old Fidel, he's down there working away. Now, notice something about Fidel. What was the very first act of Fidel Castro? He nationalized the refineries at Havana. Now, that was stupid, wasn't it? But as a Cuban, looking out after the interests of these poor Cubans, the oil industry, the refineries were total profit to Cuba. The oil wasn't taken. It wasn't expropriated from Cuba. It was brought in from the outside and was sold outside. It was total profit to the Cuban economy. In fact, it was the one element in Cuba that made it the second wealthiest nation in Latin America. But Fidel Castro, the day he arrived in Havana, nationalizes the very industry that made Cuba a wealthy nation. The most stupid thing he could do as a Cuban, but very brilliant if he was working for somebody else. The question is, who is he working for? For Cuba? For the peasants of Cuba? Or for the boss in New York? Let's look at Alaska. Oil was discovered in Alaska. The United States government declared a federal land freeze 2 years ago. That means that nobody can buy, sell, lease any property in Alaska. They don't want anybody making any money on the deal. Nor are you dirty, grubby landholders. You see, it was decided that until things were settled to protect the investors, to protect the citizens, that they would have this freeze, giving 2 years for seismographic readings to locate all the oil so that they wouldn't have to do any bidding on land that wasn't any oil on. Now, once all the seismographic readings were being made by Standard Oil mainly and her subsidiaries, they then came up with a new idea. That is, that this land should be put into a state pool and should be leased for the good of all the citizens. Now, it's also decided that in order to keep from having unfair competition and bidding, that only one bidder would be allowed on each tract of land. And the bidder would be assigned. That's the way to make sure that the best price is got for the citizens of Alaska. But notice a rival of Arthur Goldberg's son, to represent the Alaskan Eskimos in their rights for national self-determination and demand that 85% of the flat oil lands be turned over to the Eskimos as their rightful inheritance as an oppressed people. Arthur Goldberg, representing these oppressed people, is going to try to seize 85% of all the oil lands for the uplifting of the downtrodden. Oh, of course. And the uplifting of the downtrodden Eskimos. So you're always going to have the uplifting of somebody. It's going to be grape pickers, or it's going to be grapefruit pickers, or it's going to be anybody we can uplift to get a little riot going to get ourselves a nice little monopoly deal, right? You've got to go out and get some people to get their head beat in. Now some Eskimos are supposed to go out and get their head beat in. You see, always get the num-nums in the street. Let's now move on to another interesting subject. All the communist nations of the world are totally controlled by the Politburo. 36 men who own, control, and run everything, or at least overtly do.
They are in turn, obviously, puppets of some higher force. The Communist Party USA is nothing but a front group for the operation. The purpose of the Communist Party USA is for American people to blame for everything goes wrong and to attack it so that the real conspirators can operate without interference. It is a dodge operation. It's an ad hoc committee because this is only a front operation. Let's go to World Marxist Review, October 1965. In the official Communist press, you get the straight party line. You don't have to... They make it clear because they're talking to their party members and they want to make sure that they understand the program. They say, this is October 1965, that they have created three major offensives in the United States, the peace offensive, the civil rights offensive, and the poverty offensive. But that the final drive offensive must not be in the name of race, but in the name of poverty, the proletarian, because it must be economic determinism. It must be a poor people's drive. Not a racial drive. It must be a proletarian movement, or appeared to be. Therefore, we must transfer and consolidate the peace movement, the civil rights movement, into the poverty movement for the final anti-monopoly coalition, that is a proletarian drive, of riots and revolution in the United States for the overthrow of this country. Notice the bang-bang down in Memphis. Dr. Martin Luther King gets shot. Notice Abernathy does not talk about Negro. He does not talk about race. He talks about the economic deprived, the nation's poor, an amalgamation of the nation's poor into a movement of the poverty. Notice the poor people's march. No longer racial march. No longer racial sit-ins or civil rights sit-ins, but ADC mother sit-ins, welfare mother sit-ins, economically deprived sit-ins. It is the poverty offensive now because it must end up the proletarian drive. The Negro has been converted from thinking 2 years ago, where he was thinking race, to thinking of the Negro as being an economically deprived person and who joined with all economic deprived, the nation's poor, in the fight for their just share of the national product. It is no longer a racial issue. Civil rights is dead as an issue. The issue today is the poverty, the proletarian drive, the communist revolution. At that time, they called it, this is 1965, the Anti-Monopoly Coalition, who financed, led, controlled, and educated the trainers and cadre. The monopolist. It's the biggest fraud ever. Of course, the guys on the street don't know this. Let me give you a little illustration. A couple of months ago, I just moved to South Carolina. Before I lived in Detroit, I operated some apartment buildings down in the inner city. And one of the buildings, which is one block from where the riot started, there was an Arab groceryman named Mr. Harb. He was gunned down on the street corner there by four youths trying to rob him and died within a matter of minutes. But a couple of weeks before he died, I was standing on the same street corner with Mr. Harb, and we were carrying on a discussion. And I said, Mr. Harb, you see the violence and the hatred? He says, I don't understand. He says, everywhere, everywhere. I said, get out of this neighborhood. You're not going to live long. He said, I can't. I got everything in the store. I said, get out. And he said, I can't do it. I said, do you think there's anybody behind this, or is this just accident? He says, it's a communist revolution. And I was kind of egging him on. I said, what do you mean a communist revolution? You don't believe me. I mean, you're trying to tell me that. He said, look, I want to tell you something. He says, after the Second World War, when we were poor over in the Middle East, he says, I was a revolution maker. He said, what we would do, eight of us, would go into town. And our job was to get a revolution. We were paid on the number of martyrs we got, the number of dead bodies. Strictly a dead body count. Free enterprise. I said, well, how do you operate? He said, well, we go in there, about eight of us. Two will get in the middle of the street, starting the ruckus. Everybody comes out. They don't have television to watch the show. They all get around. Six of you on the outside. One or two on the side. They say a little thing, slightly inflammatory against the government, but not much to start with. Very low tone. You pick it up on the outside and start a chant. You know, the Arabs are quite emotional people. And they start moving with the chant. And then the chant builds up and builds up and builds up until the point you get marching down to the police station. And they want to show them a thing or two. Marching, shouting, you know. At this time, signs magically appear out of your cases that you brought to town. The boys are marching along, and you got your sign, and you're dumping along to the police station. There's six policemen down there watching 1,000 people come down the street. They load the machine guns. They're not going to come through that gate. That's the final line. They're not going to come beyond the gate. This isn't a matter of any issues. It's a matter now of survival, isn't it? They know the machine guns will open up when they come through that gate. Okay? You walk along. When they get near the gate, you hand your sign to some num-num who's dancing along, and you step in a doorway. And bang, 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 the machine guns open up. And you look around and see how business is going. Now, after all the shooting subsides, you go out and count your bodies and send in your report. The next day you have a funeral. Funerals are great. These people cannot have died in vain. Their blood must be avenged. Oh, boy, you can get lots of good speeches at a funeral. Nothing like a funeral to inflame riots and move together people into a mass movement for a bigger building. And more bodies. Bodies are what you want. Martyrs is what you want in a revolution. In 3-4 days, you really got a show going. You bomb children in church basements. You do whatever what you need to get it back. Take a look here. Cal Braden, who wrote Martin Luther King's speeches, a white man, was arrested and convicted because he dynamited a Negro's home in a white district, one he had sold to the Negro, in order to get martyrs for revolution. This man was let out by the Supreme Court, not because he was innocent, but because they said the state had no right to put him in jail, for he was trying to overthrow the federal government, and state law didn't apply. Another white man, the head of the Communist Transmission Belt of the South, James Dombrowski, financed Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King's first assistant was Hunter Pitzadel, district organizer of the Communist Party of New Orleans. The second man who replaced him was a man named Bayard Rustin, convicted sex pervert and 10 years organizer of the Young Communist League, which meant he was a disciplined member of the Communist Party. The third man, the Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth, 12 years organizer of the Young Communist League. This man, Martin Luther King, was a total captive. He had to do as he was told. His speeches were written for him. If he tried to run for it, he knew if he stayed, the day came that he was more popular dead for his bosses because he could be used now, his body, for funerals. Funerals are a great thing to sell civil rights acts. We now have a new thing. It's called law by funeral. Funerals are times in which we're told we now must have this law. Now it shows to the American people that we've got to have this law to govern ourselves because of this awful crime. And we have 3 days of legislation lobbying by national television over the dead body of somebody. And they force even Martin Luther King's own wife to get up there and read the whole thing about napalming the children, the whole communist line, Vietnam, the whole thing. She's got to go through the show as a puppet. These people have no even respect for the dead. But Martin Luther King had to be shot to transfer, notice, the whole transfer now, to the proletarian movement. The head of this movement was Dr. Martin Luther King. The head of this movement, Dr. Benjamin Spock. The head of this movement, Walter Reuther. Walter Reuther, the key organization in the poverty drive, is a citizens' crusade against poverty, whose president is Walter Reuther, and which organization is totally financed by the Ford Foundation. The head of the proletarian drive of the United States. Now, isn't that kind of funny? You know, for a couple of years ago when Ford had the 60-day strike, before that strike, I was coordinator of the John Birch Society in Detroit. Many of my members are, of course, Ford employees. One of the engineers would tell me before the strike, we're going to have a strike in a couple of weeks. I said, how come you're going to have a strike? Very simple. General Motors had just brought out, you know, the new cars had just come out. General Motors had scraped their line. That's a term in the automobile industry to mean that they cheapened everything through the whole product to get the price down, $35. And they're undercutting Ford at $35. Ford could not meet the price without scraping their line. I said, how long does it take to scrape a line? He said, 60 days. We'll have it scraped. That's why the boys are being pulled. Walter Reuther pulls the boys so they don't get any layoff pay. While Ford Motor Company and all the people necessary, the engineers and so forth, to scrape the line are not on strike. The line is scraped and comes back out 61 days, and boys are back at work again. Save Ford millions. When Chrysler was overloaded a few years ago, and they had in January enough to supply the whole market for a year, Chrysler goes on strike for 158 days, going back to work the day necessary to go in production for the next year's model. How much did that save? Millions and millions. The boys are taken again. You see, it's all part of a show. Walter Reuther lives pretty nice in his island. I'll tell you, in his causeway, in his army, he's got this guy that lives high on the hog. Anyway, this little show, the communist show, and on this side, we have, I mentioned some of the executive committee, this government, this branch of our government, the executive branch with 7 million employees, is totally controlled. Under Lyndon Johnson at one time, every single member of the cabinet was a member of the CFR. Every single member. And certainly Lyndon Johnson, who made $19 million as a senator, at $25,000 a year.
wasn't doing too bad himself, you know, let alone what he got as the president. Let's look at our Congress. Over half of our members of the House of Representatives were elected by Walter Reuther Scope and are answerable to Walter Reuther. Over half of the members of the United States Congress today were elected by Walter Reuther. Over half of our senators made their million, first million, as a senator. Of our Supreme Court, I don't think we have to say much. It is probably the crummiest group of swine ever assembled. We have lifetime member of the Ku Klux Klan, Justice Black, who in 23 years has yet to hand down a single decision contrary to the wishes of the Communist Party as they publicly declared it. We have Douglas, the right-winger, who 7% of the time has voted against the Communist Party. Warren voted 8% against the Communist Party, only 92% for it, which is, puts him amongst extreme rightists on that bench. I'll guarantee you. We have a Supreme Court that passes a decision after decision to permit every sort of crime and to prohibit any restriction on the liberty of the criminal, whether it be in pornography, murder, sex crimes, or anything else, from being protected from any sort of awful reprisals of the victims. We are to protect the criminal. No one is out to protect the victim. The decisions of our Supreme Court, our Congress, and the executive decisions, and let me just give you a few of those. By the way, here's a little pamphlet. It's just as a sample. There's a thing called an executive order. These are issued by the President of the United States and become law by being printed in the National, the Federal Register. I have here some executive orders as just a sample issued by President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Considered the Office of Economic Planning. These are the executive orders prescribing emergency preparedness responsibilities of the federal government. These executive orders establish, remember these are created by the president alone, establishes the Office of National Emergency and a Director of National Emergency, appointed alone by the president, without advice and counsel of anyone, who has the power at his own discretion, without even consulting the president, of declaring a national emergency. When he has so declared a national emergency, this unelected man has the power, on his own, to confiscate all plant equipment, public utilities, communication, all transportation, including private automobiles, and to confiscate all farms and farm machinery for the good of the state, and to order the Postmaster General to register the entire human population and to mobilize it for the good of the state. What constitutes a national emergency is not outlined or even mentioned. It's at the total discretion of this man. Now, will you tell me what portion of the Constitution gives the president that power? But the American people have allowed it to happen because of their ignorance. Oftentimes willingly to know the facts. And willing ignorance and laziness in promoting and putting those facts before their neighbors and their friends. Our enemy is not the guy in New York or in Washington. It's a guy across the street who doesn't know what's going on. And if we don't wake him up, we have no hope. All right. What we have here is the socialist arm, and here we have the communist arm. We'll get into the Fabian Socialist Society. This arm is the evolutionary arm. It passes laws by evolution rather than by revolution to seize power over all wealth. This is the legal arm, while this is the illegal arm. This is the overt arm, the one in the open. This is the covert arm of the very same conspiracy. This is the communist arm. This is the socialist arm. This is the anarchy arm. The one way to destroy a republic is by the hot method of anarchy, and the other is by corrupting it by democracy and converting it into an oligarchy by having the same charade called an election between Tweedledick and Tweedledumper. This is the democracy arm. Notice the seizing of power and the enslavement of the American people is to be done by democratic, evolutionary, legal process. But the same extermination and the same control is to be achieved, for both arms are Marxist. Notice this arm always says that they're taxing us to fight communism. But they finance the communist nations. They finance the total revolution. Read the War on Poverty pamphlet back there. The whole revolution in this country is being financed by federal funds extracted by you, by force. This is going to be one of the first nations in the history of the world to have committed suicide. We are financing our own destruction domestically and foreign. And the total program, both the financing of the phony wars and the paying of the financing the communist side of those phony wars, the financing of all these revolutions, and our government says we must tax you more and more to stop the unrest, the riot, the hatred, and the ignorance in our country while they promote and finance the riot and the revolution in the streets and the wars externally. And with all of our nation now in 30 years of conscription and draft, notice how the liberals keep talking about how terrible the draft is. And who was it? It was the Kennedy bill. Is the draft bill, isn't it? The liberals are the ones who put through every single draft the United States has ever had. And yet the liberals get out fighting the draft. Why? You have a phony war? Those guys in Vietnam know it's phony. Those guys getting drafted know this war is phony. Sure, you wouldn't like to go over to a war. You know you couldn't win. It was meant for nothing and you financed the enemy. They want you in a position that you cannot consciously support this war so that you rebel against the war, and therefore they get you in a rebellious mood to be able to say that they now need to tax more and more to control the unrest and the rebellion in the nation. The problems of our nation, poverty, unrest, the marches, the hatred, and the wars have all been created, financed, and promoted by government, which is controlled and has been by the very same small clique in this nation for 60 years. Without exception. And you don't have your left hand fight your right hand and go through the motion of doing so when controlled by a single brain, obviously. And let's just amuse children to put people to sleep. And we're being put to sleep. Our government keeps telling you to pay taxes, to die in foreign battlefields, and constantly be able to be subjected to all sorts of indecencies, revolutions, riots, and put your children to these brain laundries to be totally corrupted in order to fight communism. And yet never has our nation, our government, ever opposed communism on any front and won. After we have been paying 100 to 200 thousands of millions every year since time immemorial to fight communism, we can't win in a nation no bigger than the size of the state of Missouri. Something's wrong. In 1948, we delivered an atomic bomb to the Soviet Union to blow up, to scare the American people into accepting more and more government controls. In 1957, we delivered. And the picture we got of that missile, by the way, Sputnik 1, came right out of Popular Science, Popular Mechanics Magazine, page 152, August 1957. You'll find it. 6 months before it went up. It was sitting in Detroit, Michigan. The man we saw in space, remember the first man in space? You see a TV and there was a movie film. In one film he has a round mask and the other he has a square one. The bubbles show out of the mask in one and the wires in the other. In addition to that, the craziest of all is this man alone in space taking his first spacewalk. He shows a picture of him coming out of the capsule and going and taking a spacewalk. Taken from space? Oh, my gosh. Kodak declared that the picture of the backside of the moon, remember, we've forgotten that now, haven't we? It was an oil painting. As far as we know, the Russians have never got a guy over 8,000 feet. And that was in an airplane to come over here to tell us all about it. You're supposed to be intimidated into succumbing to all of the jargon and all of the taxes and the control. fearing the great Russian menace.
Russia's total production is so small. And their wealth is so short, and their surplus is non-existent. They couldn't beat the Boy Scouts. And never could.
You have no worry of external aggression, and never have had. The whole ballyhoo about war and missiles and ABMs is all to keep you off your mind of the real war. The infiltration, subversion, destruction of your youth, the total hatred and chaos in our nation, and the total taxes that you're being paid to support your own downfall. Our problem is not fallout, it's sellout. Our problem is not external war, it's internal treason. And Cicero told us 2,000 years ago, do not worry about an army, no matter how large, at your gates. It is not nearly as terrible as a small force in your alleys who are committing treason. A fifth column inside your nation is far greater to be feared than any external force. We have never, and no nation has ever, been taken over by external aggression by the communists. There isn't even anything in any military manual that communists have ever written for military warfare as we know it. It is all guerrilla warfare. Let's take a look here. Back in 1876, there was formed an organization called the Order of the Illuminati. This organization, 1776, excuse me, May 1st, May Day, by a man named Adam Weishaupt, a college professor in Bavaria. This organization, he said, is a Christian organization for to bring about a peace, the end of poverty, war, and disease, fraternity, equality, liberty. Now, the youth recruited in this organization were sent out to become about these great noble ends for mankind. And, of course, they were resisted, and so they were told that, you see, the people in power got their power by evil means, and you're going to have to use evil means to overthrow them. But your means are not evil because your ends are moral. And because of the morality of your ends, the most noble ends are possible, your actions are moral. And so you get these people out committing crimes to finance the wonderful goals of the end of poverty, war, and disease, and to bring about a one world government. Now, while they're out there marching, get lunked over their head and so forth, some of these people like committing the crimes of robbery and the other things that are necessary to finance and promote the movement. Those people who take a liking to the criminal acts are promoted. At each level of the 16 levels that they move up, they are re-instructed verbally. Always, it changes a little. By the time you reach the fifth and sixth rank, you're now instructed that J of N, this is Jesus Nazareth, J of N came here to teach us reason. That man, by his own reason, freed from the superstitions of religion and tradition, would be capable of solving all of man's problems and creating a perfect society. And that man could create and develop everything on his own and be the true creator. And this was the real God, man's reason. Now, see, J of N was trying to tell the people this, but they didn't accept him. The witch doctors of the day hung him on a cross. They gave the secrets to 12 men in a secret society. And these 12 men have passed the secrets down to, guess who? Adam Weishaupt, who now has a true illumination. And this is the Order of the Illuminati. The torch in the back of your dime. Anyway, let's take a look and see what happened here. In 1789, one of their operations was to pull off a thing called the French Revolution. By the way, when you reach to the very top level, the level of Rex, King, the 16th level, the real purposes of the Illuminati were now disclosed. Only one out of thousands would ever reach that, a very small select of people who had to prove themselves capable of committing any crime, no matter how heinous, with no conscience whatsoever. Be willing to do anything for the Order of Illuminati. For example, Cato, number two in command, when Spartacus asked Cato, Spartacus is Adam Weishaupt's name, the head of the Illuminati, he asked Cato's permission to kill Cato's sister. It seems Adam Weishaupt got Cato's sister pregnant, and it was going to hurt the Illuminati. Of course, Cato agreed. It was necessary for the Order of the Illuminati. This is the kind of people we're talking about. Anyway, they pulled at the very top level, That advice Hop gives the real purpose to Illuminati. He says there are two kinds of people in the world, rulers and ruled. You're either going to be a ruler or ruled by a ruler. And their intention was to be the rulers. Now, they said, all of the rulers of the past and of the present have and hold their power by one of the following methods. Either by loyalty and affection, or by place reprisals on opposition, or by offering protection, stability. By one of these methods, the rulers hold the power. But he says there's a method of ruling more powerful than any of these. A method of seizing and holding power totally without superiority. And that is the use of unlimited terror. With sufficient terror, you so cower a people that they will submit themselves to anything. It is a principle of the Illuminati to use terror not as an expedient, but as a principle in all things. Terror is not exterminating your opposition, but exterminating at random, so no one feels safe. It's not taking the butcher on the block, but taking the liberal and exterminating him. It is arresting at 2 a.m, and no one knows what happened to him. It's the disappearing of a friend, and 25 years later, you get a letter saying that he died 8 years ago, with no other explanation. It's the fact of never knowing. When you can never sleep at night. I have a friend of mine, in fact, my fencing coach, István Danese, who was a Hungarian Olympic coach, says, you know, Stovat, he said, because he's an Olympic coach, he lived fairly well. He says, it wasn't what they do to you. It's the fact that no night you go to sleep and know that in the morning you're going to be in that house. Every night the clocks come down, 2 o'clock, and you look out, you peek, are they stopped from your house, give you 15 minutes to pack one bag and never be heard of again? Never to sleep one night. He says, United States, I drive down Boulevard, that's the main street in Detroit. I feel police only when the light turns red and I put my foot on the brake. In Hungary, I feel police when I have my coffee. I feel every minute when I talk to anybody, am I making the wrong expression? I make the wrong look? Somebody misread what I have in mind and demile my family in a concentration camp? It is the living in fear that is worse than death. It's never once breathing freely and being relaxed. This is the true terror. They pulled off a little thing called the French Revolution. Notice, their God is reason. And the age of reason, man no longer needed God. What did they do in the French Revolution? One of the first things they did, they took the most notorious prostitute in France and put her on the altar, Notre Dame. Forced the Catholics to come in and fall down and worship the goddess of reason. And built a statue to the goddess of reason, a prostitute, on a pillar in the middle of Paris. The use of terror, the guillotine and the extermination, not of the enemies of the state, but at random. So that to stay alive, the only way you could stay alive was to join the mob executing your neighbors. If you joined a big enough mob screaming for somebody else's blood, you could save your life. If you didn't join the mob, you would be isolated and the mob would be exterminating you. If you lived, you had to be part of the exterminating mob. You had to be a part of the murderers. No one could then point a guilty finger at the state. The total destruction of the calendar, because it all had religious significance. 1789, since when? 7 days in a week, why? The total overthrow of the family and the breakdown of the family relationships. The promotion of all sorts of perversions. And France has never recovered from the moral collapse of the basic fiber of her people. Perpetrated in this Holocaust, which is now sung out and praised by the French people as they put up the flag of the murderers. By 1800, it was pretty well discovered. Read George Washington, 1798, October 14, writing that he had no question of the existence of the Illuminati in the United States, but he felt that their diabolical democratic schemes of destroying and breaking the government from its people were not so engrossed in this nation as to pose at that time a real danger. He was well aware of its existence, as was a man named Thomas Moore, who was rowed out in Lake Ontario and drowned in 1827, who was writing and exposing the Illuminati at that time. But out of this organization seems to have come a man named Karl Marx and Frederick Engels, who belonged to an organization called the League of Just Men, which later changed its name to the Brotherhood of Communism. These two guys were hired by this league, and this league was financed by some very wealthy people to write a manifesto. The First Communist International, 1863 to 1876, broke up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 1876, at which time Karl Marx left behind in the United States the head of the Communist Party of the United States, a man named Richard Sorge, whose son was of the very famous Sorge spying in the Middle East in the 30s and the 20s, which you can read about in the Shanghai Conspiracy. And the Second International, 1789-1914, the Third International in Russia, 1917 to present, it is called the Politburo. The Fourth International was established in 1922 in Germany and collapsed in 1928. The Fifth International was founded in San Francisco in 1945 by a man named Alger Hiss, Secretary General of the founding meeting, and the other man who helped write the manifesto, now called the UN Charter, Molotov. Molotov and Hiss wrote this charter by copying the Soviet Constitution of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics of 1936. That is the UN Charter. Read the Soviet Constitution and read the United Nations Charter. Look at the emblem of the Soviet Union, the world with the wheat cheese with the hammer and sickle on it. They haven't put the hammer and sickle on the other one yet. It's just a matter of time. Anyway, the Fifth International, the final international, has already been established. It cannot be openly and publicly declared. It's only so mentioned in the communist own literature, but not to public literature for the num-nums. Communist Party USA established in 1919 officially, though we know it existed in 1876. But more important, in 1889 was founded, 1883, in London, on the West End, an organization called the British Fabian Socialist Society. This is the key organization, for this is the organization that takes over developed nations. It's a Marxist organization, and in their manifesto, they tell you what the program is. They say the communists can take over the underdeveloped nations by revolution, but the developed nations can never be taken by revolution. They are too strong and too well educated. They must be subverted by evolution. They must be taken over by socialism, not by the crude methods of the communists. Remember, the communists don't intend to establish communism, but socialism, which become communism only when the state withers away, which is the real thing of saying, you turn everything over to us, give us ownership and control of everything, and then we'll wither away. Is there anybody dumb enough to buy that? The answer seems to be yes. There are people that stupid. Unbelievable as it may be. For you see, it isn't a union of Soviet communists. It's a union of Soviet socialist republics. For they consider socialism is what they're achieving now. Communism can only be achieved after the total world is taken by the socialist countries and they have exterminated all classes but the proletariat, and then the government withers away. Then you have communism. A communist will tell you there is no communism in the world today. There is only socialism. Socialism comes in two branches, the revolutionary socialist movement and the evolutionary socialist movement. The revolutionary socialist movement we call the Communist Party. The evolutionary socialist movement is called the Fabian Society. The evolutionary socialist movement says in its manifesto, chapter 1, page 1, paragraph 1, so we don't have to dig in too deep. It says, the communist countries take over the underdeveloped, but the developed nations can only be taken over by evolution. But it says, how can you ever establish a one-world government unless you are able to comfortably merge all people together? But people of different economic levels will not merge. You must bring all economic levels to the same level before you can ever have a true emergence and a true one-world government. Therefore, seeing it is impossible to raise the underdeveloped nation to developed level, You must destroy the developed nations and bring them to the underdeveloped level. This way they can be comfortably merged. It is for the Sabians to take over the developed nations by evolution and then by socialization, destroy the economy and bring it to underdeveloped level so that it can be truly and fully comfortably merged into a one-world socialist government. Let's get that clear. Now it says, how are they going to do it? And this applies to the program in the Fabian Manual, applies to England, the British Fabian Society. The program was first to train the future teachers, preachers, and government officers in your own schools, and then have them teach the general population to accept socialism in principle and one world government as a concept. Once this is done, to come to power by democratic methods, and when in power, to one, nationalize the basic industries, to destroy their ability to produce. Two, to give away the colonies of England, to destroy it as a world power, particularly give it to the communist nations, because these are already underdeveloped and can be more rapidly assimilated into the communist world. And three, to put the population on welfare to destroy their willingness to produce and thus cause economic collapse. Now, by the turn of the century, they had established their school, the London School of Economics, founded by the Fabian Society and supported by the first communist Marxist they imported from the mainland, a revolutionary from the mainland named George Bernard Shaw. He financed the school by a very clever marriage to money. And by the way, in the whole history of the Fabian Society in England, only one member of the working class has ever been permitted to be a member of this very exclusive group of social elite. And that is Henri Bevin, the head of the labor unions. Now, by 5 years after the founding, 1888, they had secured membership holding every chair at Cambridge and Oxford. They trained the future government officials, ministers, and teachers, so that by 1945, a man trained from his youth and 10 years of age in Fabian schools became prime minister, Clement Attlee, and proceeded to carry out with utmost haste the program of destruction of England. Harold Wilson trained from his youth. And in fact, of the 40 members of the British cabinet today in power, only 40 of them are members of the British Fabian Socialist Society. None of which are from the working class, all of which are from the social elite. Now, this organization, very successful in the history of that, I will tell you about the source of this information in just a couple of minutes, they established a branch office in the United States called the Intercollegiate Socialist Society, founded in 1905 by people like Felix Frankfurter, Jack London, Upton Sinclair, Walter Lippmann, and the boys. At Harvard, of all places. Anyway, one of their boys is a man named Woodrow Wilson, in which they got into the presidency a bit, and started pulling off the show. The Intercollegiate Socialist Society changed its name in 1920 because the communists, the socialists over in Russia were shooting so many people, became unpopular. They took on a new name called League of Industrial Democracy. People like Hubert Horatio Humphrey and people of that sort, you know. Now, the League of Industrial Democracy is a Marxist term meaning Marxism. The workers seizing and controlling industry. Industrial democracy. The League of Industrial Democracy is the Marxist League. Every so many years, in their operations, people start reaching high levels who belong to your organization, and you no longer can have the active organization carrying the name that belonged to a people of prominence in your society. Therefore, you have a new name change. However, in 1947, when the LID was ready for its name change, its new cleanup job, it chose not to necessarily change its name, but it created a new sub-organization to be the active arm, called the Americans for Democratic Action, founded in the Willard Hotel in 1947. The ADA, the Americans for Democratic Action, which is the lobby arm of the Fabian Society in the United States. By the way, in England, there is an organization called PEP, something of economic planning, whatever it is, PEP. This organization is a very clever one. Any socialist around the world, you want to push through a socialist program, and obviously you don't have any legitimate evidence to push it through, but you've got to put in a report. They make studies, that is, they write studies to support your position, publish them so you can quote them. In fact, then they quote the studies they just published and write for you the arguments and the total legislation to present to any socialist nation, any socialist around the world. He just has the stuff created in England, and it comes over in a package ready for you to distribute in the legislature and push through the bill. All pre-done by a staff of experts who, see, we have never won independence from England. Really? We're trying to. We build our own computer banks to set up our own local PEP. It's called the Mountain. It's up the Hudson River.
That's the name of it.
Anyway, we had the Council of Foreign Relations founded in 1919. This organization was for to take over the State Department and establish our foreign policy. Our foreign policy is a policy of defeat, designed because it is the intention to be defeated. Notice that this Fabian Society has always been a movement of the social, economic, political, and intellectual elite. You will find that the Fabian Socialists, this is the real operation in our nation. To take over in this country, in the developed nation, is not by the communists, it's by the Fabian Socialists, and always has been. The whole purpose is to keep your eyes focused on the actions of the Communist Party, while the Fabian Socialists take you over, under the excuse that they're fighting for you against the communists. The key is the understanding of that fact. There are hundreds of excellent books, and you'll find them even in the liberal bookstores, condemning communism and the brutalities around the world. You'll find even Life and Look magazine even coming out with things condemning the communist brutalities and wrongs, but you will never find exposure of the Fabian. You will never find exposure of the collusion and the fact here. When a guy like Joseph McCarthy was having communists on before him, our newspapers, radio, and television all agreed that he was the greatest statesman this nation had produced, the next president of the United States, a fine and noble American. Then the day Joseph McCarthy walked over here and pulled a guy out of Fort Monmouth and put him on the stand out of the executive branch, which showed the collusion that these two people, groups were working hand in hand. That day, McCarthy became an evil, alcoholic, maniac, a character assassin, a depraved maniac. And every newspaper and television changed his mind instantly. How come? Why didn't some have pro and some con? Why was a universal switch instantly on the day that man from Fort Monmouth got on the stand? You see, Senator Joseph McCarthy had the Communist Party records. For the Secretary of the Communist Party had absconded with him and delivered him to Senator McCarthy. They couldn't deny what McCarthy was saying. They knew it was true, so what do? You use character assassination. And they haven't quit yet, have they? They never will. They'll never quit assassinating Senator McCarthy. Because he was dumb enough to connect these two arms. And if you connect those two arms as working together, you will be smeared. If you don't connect those two arms, you're wasting your time. If you do, why is the John Birch Society smeared so much? Because it doesn't say it's just over here. It says these boys and these boys are working together for the same boys. It says it's a criminal conspiracy. It's not accidental. It's not just folly. It's not just a stupid course of history. These things, this violence, this hatred, these wars are promoted by people who know what they're doing. That it isn't accidental or stupid. It is brilliant. Diabolical, true, but brilliant. And once you discover that, you're going to be a bad anti-communist. You see, as long as you're fighting Gus Hall, you're a nice anti-communist group. Nobody ever will smear you. You can fight Gus Hall all you want, and nobody will ever call you a dirty name. But you ever connect Gus Hall together with Abe Fortas, Otto Goldberg, Lyndon Baines Johnson, and Hubert Rachel Humphrey, and Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller, you're going to be in trouble. I'll guarantee you. And if you don't connect them, you're wasting your time. The thing is, it's a criminal conspiracy. These people down here in the Anti-Monopoly Coalition are in the Monopoly Coalition, only they don't know it. Read the Socialist Party manuals. What does it talk about? The awful Rockefellers and the rich, these evil barons, this establishment. They're right, aren't they? Sure they're right. But what do they say? You let us set up the new oligarchy, and we'll own and control and get these guys. In other words, let us be your masters instead of those masters. Oh, no, boy. And worst of all, the first thing is if they were legitimate, they'd be just as bad as the other guys.